May 8th, 2021, it's the Waffle Pedro Show.
Thank you.
Watt for Pedro show. Happy Saturday. Started off the show with So What, John Coltrane with Miles Davis. Then we had Sweet Cobra with Repo. And you can hear some breathing because I'm not man alone. Brother Matt.
Hello.
Yeah, say no to
good morning. Good morning, Pedro.
We're still in quite Quarantino mode, but those engineers in Estonia with their Skype inventions made it possible for me to be talking with Timothy Remus.
Yes, sir.
And
thank you.
Talking to me from Chicago?
Well, technically from Niles. It's like the San Pedro of Illinois.
Okay.
Except completely inland, and basically every serial killer in history could be linked back to Niles, Illinois. So I don't know if Pedro can boast something like that, a stat like that. But yeah, we're right outside Chicago here in Niles.
Yeah, whoa. John Wayne Gacy is the guy I know from Chicago that got into that.
Yeah, his mom had an apartment in Niles.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like that Kevin Bacon game, like 7 degrees of separation. Like you could link literally every serial killer back to Niles, Illinois in like one step.
Yeah, first show me this single he had of a band, the mentally ill or something.
Uh-huh.
Picture him dressed as a clown shaking Rosalind Carter's hand.
Yeah, I mean, like he was a prolific killer and a prolific man of the people as well.
I'm gonna.
Some dark shit.
Okay.
Yeah, every once in a while, like I had a house in this area, and every once in a while someone would pull up and ask me, "Hey, where's the Gacy house?" You know.
Right.
And there's all this crazy.
I got
shit
a tiny
Chicago
story. I knew an A&R man who sent him his picture, and he made a painting, put him, of him, and then him in the corner of Pogo with the fucking vampire teeth.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, man, I don't know. I wouldn't get involved with that. But
yeah.
Anyway, your music journey.
Mm-hmm. Yes, sir.
Timothy, please bring your earliest musical recollection.
Sure. I'd have to say I had an uncle who was a big kind of like folky, you know, hitchhiker dude. And he would play a lot of like Cat Stevens and Lightfoot and, you know, Towns and every, you know, every holiday. He was like the youngest sibling of my mother's, who was like the matriarch, oldest sibling of the family. So we kind of had the responsible holiday household where like everyone kind of ended up for the free meal. And my Uncle Laurie would always be playing those tunes, like sitting on the couch and killing them, like killing Cat Stevens songs. And, you know, and I had some other family that were musical. I grew up on like, as far as like, you know, recorded music, Donovan and, you know, obviously Beatles, some Animals. And then I had an older brother who had a really wild, eclectic musical taste, everything from like Dokken to like Gary Numan and everything in between. So kind of like a weird clusterfuck of different like sonic roads meeting or whatever.
Now, your uncle, did he bring his own guitar? Were there instruments in the pad where you grew up?
Yeah. So we always had, my mom had this nice Gibson acoustic. It wasn't like a Hummingbird or anything, but it was like, you know, better than like a student guitar. We played violin. Me and my two siblings played violin from a super young age. So we always had violins, ukulele, and then a piano. So he actually, I think, usually just played my mom's guitar. And you know, my mom wasn't a big player, but she like knew enough chords to be the accompaniment, or to like, you know, she knew enough on the piano that she could like check our violin tuning. And, but she was like a great like lover of music and like really liked to champion, it in other people, just not so much in herself, but you know, she was always on the like production end of making sure the gig was happening in the house. So
now, was the violin, I'm assuming, which is dangerous. Sorry.
No,
it was a lesson thing, but was it like home lesson or was it part of school thing?
No, so we did like the Suzuki thing. We all started around age 3, and the best part about it was I got pulled out of school about an hour or two every week to go get this lesson away from school. And that also usually meant I could get like McDonald's at the front end of that or the back end of that or something, like, you know, like some kind of fast food with my mom before or after the lesson, which was awesome. So like, as a kid that did not want to play violin by any means, I was like, well, I get to be not in school and I might get McDonald's. And, that was pretty much, I'd be lying if I said that wasn't enough for me to keep at it, you know. But, my mom was a freak, man. She woke me up before school every day and made me practice in my whitey tighties. And, I'm glad she did it now, you know. Back then I was like, fuck this. I want to sleep or eat pancakes. But, you know, now I'm like, damn, I'm glad that woman did that.
Now you learned to read?
I kind of faked my way through that because I had an older brother. So he was already playing all these tunes before I ever had to try to play them myself. So, and I had a pretty decent ear, so I could kind of like look at the page and act like I knew how to read, but not, I didn't actually ever fully learn it, because of that. So I kind of just cheated my way through the reading process of it all. Again, you know, just, it's just the way it was. Like, every song I ever learned from Twinkle Twinkle to like whatever little smaller concertos, I had already heard 5 million times from my brother practicing. So, as my ear developed, I was able to fake my way through, having to learn how to read music.
Well, at the end of the day, Timothy, it's sound, right?
Yeah.
We don't know how you got there. We don't know if you faked or you were for real. I mean, right? Pay
yeah,
no attention to
these,
that man behind the curtain, I think, from The Wizard of Oz.
There's also accepting, like, what your skills are and what side of the brain is stronger in how you approach it, you know? And it's like, there's been times in my life where I have tried to take a step back and, like, kind of relearn some of those fundamental things. And with a lot of, like, you know, put a lot of energy and effort into it, and it just, that shit just doesn't stick with me. So there's just times where I'm like, well, this is the player that I am. Like, I couldn't show up for a gig and sight read at speed, but
it's all
you know,
right,
I can do other things better.
It's
than,
all right.
Than
it's all right,
think,
man.
You know? Yeah,
I'm just curious because every, like you were saying, all the roads lead up to now and everybody has their own journey. What was
the first
record you bought with your own money?
Probably I bought a Black Flag tape. I bought the Wasted Again tape.
Yeah.
And
what was the first gig that you went and saw?
I think the biggest, the like real gig would have been Violent Femmes at the Metro.
And what about, it's across the street from Wrigley.
Played
there many times. Joe Shanahan, the boss.
Yeah.
We're talking some years ago.
I painted one of his apartments.
All right. He was, you know what? That man was always bitching to me. Always. Really. You know, he's one of the guys that taught. Because, right, there's this cliche about the promoter's always the enemy. Bullshit. If a good one. Yeah, you work for an asshole once. But, man, that cat's got to keep a scene going when you're there once a year, right?
Yeah, I mean, he definitely is a huge part of Chicago music.
Here's another thing I learned. You get a kink in your neck looking down at people or looking up to people.
Right.
Right. You look straight ahead and healthier. Look, I want to play Wet Brain.
Okay.
Thank you. I'm calling you downtown. Oh, no. Oh, few stones stand between me and the vertical drop to my left. My legs shake but do not buckle as I stare down into the fields that unroll like a patchwork quilt. A few months ago, my balance would have faltered, my nerves collapsed as I gazed down at the flight patterns of birds. However, now I pause, let the wind blow upon my face, let the tears come. The dragon sleeps beneath me as my poles guide me across its limestone scales. A grass wave, forever on the verge of breaking. This creature is not a thing to be conquered, but adorned by small footprints, imprinting tiny patterns over its back. Slowness is key. There is no shame in this. No shame in tiptoeing across skyline, balancing my way across the landscape. I was not born acrobat, nor tightrope walker, nor climber. Yet here I am, forever disproving my own theories, creating new myths. The dragon will remain in slumber long after I am gone. And there will be others, so many others that think they too cannot withstand this climb. And like me, will fear to slip upon the descent. They will also learn how to control their pulse, discover that they are part of the view. Take your time, my friend says. So I grasp it, hold it close to my chest, as the two of us rise and fall, like a breath.
Why for Pedro show that chunk of music started with Sweet Cobra doing Wet Brain. And, God, I think it was the singer man for Carnage Asada who used that as slang for being kind of alcoholic.
Yeah, it's like a actually like kind of an offensive term about, like, you know, it's almost like when you punch drunk. It's like the alcoholic version of being punch drunk, where you've like kind of lost a lot of your capacities based on fully existing on vodka and like not even the good vodka. But ironically, the song has nothing really to do with that.
It's
total like working.
A lot of power in the title, right? A lot of power.
Yeah. We're definitely the band that just has like working titles that stick, and they usually don't relate to the actual lyrical content or whatever. So.
And then we had the Cutthroat Brothers, where they asked me to play some bass. It's called "The King Is Dead." And did the cover. Pours after that from Italy. I was asked to play bass on that song called Transparent Man. You know, trading files. The internet's not all bad. You can spread bullshit and lies, or you can trade files and do collabs.
Right, musically, man. Yeah.
Here's a whole album I made with a cat near you in Iowa City, across the border.
Yeah.
What's it? Quad Cities, right? You guys are close to Iowa.
Yeah,
there,
yep,
right?
Yep.
And I think Cheap Trick Cats are from one of those.
They're from, not Rockford. They're from Aurora or Rockford. If someone hears me say that, I'll get killed.
Me too. So we're going to be.
Yeah, but like right. They're in. Yeah. Shit.
So this is
I
Sam
think Rockford.
Lock Ward.
I think Rockford.
SLW. Yeah, we mean no disrespect. SLWCC Watt is a whole album we did just. You know, he brought me songs and listened to them and play bass to them. That's kind of how you prove yours. You know, bass has got trippy politics. You look good making other cats look good. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's righteous. No facts. And then his buddy from Dubuque, a little north of Iowa City, Bob Buckle Jr., Loving Cup. Thomas Prentin from D.C., modern artist. John Wayne. I think that was actually a SoCal project, but it was an album called Text Funeral, and this is the title song. Slang from Hokkaido over in Japan with Human Air, the big town, Sapporo. And then Sophie Svaram and Christopher Gregory, Derby, England, right by Nottingham. The Dragon's Back, finally, Sweet Cobra. Bring them the water. Okay, Timothy, what about after school, not graduate, but during school, but afternoon? The basement band, the garage band, the bedroom band, did you do that?
Yeah, of course. We did. We had this, like, goofy band, really young.
Well, how'd you get on the bass? I got to ask you that.
Well, the bass, for me, is like, Sweet Cobra started with me writing the first record kind of mostly all the way through and then, like, corralling dudes, you know, like convincing dudes to play in a band with me. And I was known in Chicago as a drummer, not well known, but like that was my thing. And I was like, yeah, but I'm not going to be the drummer in this band. I want to be the front man. And so you have the added difficulties of convincing, you know, people to trust you.
I got the timeline fucked up, huh, Timothy?
Yeah.
The first transition is violin to drums.
Yeah.
Okay, tell me about that so we don't fuck up the listeners and their comprehension of your journey through music.
Oh, fair, yeah. Sure, I had an awesome switchover. It was like an earned, it was like a validation of like effort and work ethic from going from playing violin, and there was a crossover period, you know, in my like 10, 11, 12 years old where I finally got my hands on a decent kit, and I was coming home from school and practicing every day for hours and hours, up until the point where, you know, my grandma would flip the lights on and off in the basement to tell me it was dinner time or whatever, like really committed to it. And eventually
what brought on the change? You say that you finally got a good kit, but what was the first
Yeah, I can't really remember a time not wanting to play drums. My brother made me a kit out of Baskin Robbins tubs, you know, with like contact paper. Like I always was the was always trying to make it happen. And once I got a decent kit,
it was more like a parallel universe to the violin. You were doing both at the same time.
Totally. But the drums were not being like necessarily championed by my folks. They were like, this is like a hobby, but the violin is like the real thing you put on your resume, you know?
So you had a dangling dilemma.
Yeah, right.
Dangling duality.
Yeah, which at that time, whatever, I guess I wasn't thinking of it in those terms. But I was happy and proud when my folks were like, hey, look, you clearly are like committed to this whole drumming thing, you know, whatever this bullshit is. So, you know, you don't have to play violin anymore because you're practicing like 3 hours a day.
I will say though, violin is music and music is music. Right?
Oh, it's so, fucking totally badass. I'm so glad.
Here's a fundamental philosophy of me. Whenever you play, you're investing in the next time you play, whatever you're doing,
it's all about chops and fucking you know, like it all feeds the same animal. Yeah. No matter if you're covering a fucking Bing Crosby song, or
the tool, the instrument.
Right? Yeah.
Why can't drummers get songwriting credit? You know, this is a big problem with Chico Hamilton in the 60s. Drummers can't write songs. Why? Because the notes, they don't last long enough? Oops.
Well, I mean, yeah, I definitely, strongly disagree with that. I mean, one of my favorite bands right now is definitely, in my mind, kind of like a drummer-written band. It's this band called Facts. That's kind of like a band that came out of from that band Disappears. And it's dude Noah who plays drums. And you can tell that the guitar player is leaning back and going, hey, man, this is... Like, I don't know if, Noah knows he's writing the songs, but he's, writing the songs. And it's, the maturity of the guitar player letting him do it that makes it such a special thing. Or it's, a combination of the maturity of all the players. But, you can just – you're, this is fully being, cultivated by the drums. And it is – it would definitely have to have an equal, if not stronger, credit on the liner notes as the writer, if it were to be that way, you know, it's pretty special.
Timothy, later, can you flow me links to that so I can check it out?
So
you say you get a better kit and you start playing with cats like rock and roll, right?
Yeah. Playing along to the, to the Hitachi record player, any records I can get my hands on. And then I had my neighbor next door, his dad was a former rock and roller. He still had his Vox Phantom guitar, and we'd plug that thing in and just kind of do whatever we could do. And then I think a lot of times the drummer ends up being where the bass camp is for rehearsals. And I think with my family is they were just happy to know where the fuck I was. You know what I mean? They're like, we'll endure this shit if
that's totally why D Boone wanted me to make a band with D Boone.
Yeah,
it was like Econo childcare.
Totally. I mean, my grandma used to joke about she just turned her hearing aids down and she could still hear it, but at least she knew where I was and she wasn't worried that I was getting arrested or fucking breaking windows or something, you know.
Now, did this and, tune for this duet you had? Did you guys ever do any gigs or was it just practice band?
Yeah, you know, we had the neighborhood kids come downstairs and listen to us play an Aerosmith cover or some stupid shit like that. And then,
I'm curious, did you write any of your own material or try to?
A couple years later, I did, the first song I wrote was called I Am a Cop. And it was basically about cops breaking up house parties. The song was just in my mind, the only thing, I had no worldview. And the only thing as a white kid in the suburbs was that cops didn't like skateboarding and they don't like punk rock. And every house show I ever attended or played got broken up by cops. And that was why I did not like cops. That was it. You know, that was very easy and simple and relatable to my own very, very non major problems in my life. But I was that was the song, I Am a Cop.
I'm going to assume again, but you probably wrote both the music and the lyrics.
Yeah. We were I think I might have written it from, I don't know if I wrote it from the drum set or if I kind of, just fouled it out on the guitar. I don't remember exactly how I did it, but the band then was called Office Boy, and it was just like this little cool little like punk thing. I don't know. We were super into Minor Threat and like kind of faster.
Whoa.
Downbeat stuff, you know.
Yep. We're at the end of the first hour, May 8, 2021, edition Juan Pedro Show. Special guest Timothy Reeves. Hold tight for hour two. May 8, 2021. It's the second hour of the Juan Pedro Show.
Thank you. back to red like you. So go and write a song about it. I said, I'll see what I can do. Tonight, the stars are my destination.
exist in the now. The silence is deadly. It cuts through your soul. There is no one to blame. You dug your own hole. You're coming down with a car. So you jerk off. Jump in, but I don't know how.
Really? Yeah.
Watt from Fever, our show. We start off the second hour with Sweet Cobra doing Coats. Then we had Ben Salter from Tasmania, but this is him live in Japan doing The Stars, My Destination. Lucas the Bell after that with Dougie Undies, La Cumbia del Zapatero from Chicha Libre, The Tomb of Love, Modern Blonde, Kalinich and Tiven, Outside, and finally Future Ghosts from Sweet Cobra. Okay, fill us in now. The time between Office Boy and Sweet Cobra.
Yeah.
You're a drummer, man, right? Because Sweet Cobra is when you go over to the bass. Okay.
Yeah, I had a band called, we had a band called Baxter that I was, I joined. It already existed. It was like, the dude that sings in the band Rise Against was the front man for that band. And then we also extended that band kind of into this other thing that became the Killing Tree, which was like a little, I guess maybe a little more metallic version of the same kind of stuff. You know, it would be in the vein of like, I don't know, Hot Water Music or something like that. Like something loosely related to a campfire song, but like with like a heavier edge to it, I guess. I don't know.
It's okay. It's some people, they just got, maybe I do it too. You gotta like, I think it's because of the genre indoctrination. You gotta like, oh, it sounds like these guys or those guys.
Yeah. It's always like.
But we're gonna break free of that shit, right? So Baxter for a while, and it ain't your band, right? So you end up joining somebody else's band, or you start
your own? It was a band that already existed, but definitely like, you know, a band that would have been like super collaborative. It's not like, you know, there's a leader, but like it's kind of more like everyone's pitching in kind of thing. You know, in those younger altruistic days of where that's possible, I guess. I don't know. and then, you know, we had the same little camp of dudes that kind of all just kept starting bands, and, you know, it was all the same kind of incestual, everyone's in each other's bands kind of thing. And,
yeah, but it's kind of, it's like a giant fucking classroom in a way too. It's happening.
Yeah. I mean, and that was the beautiful thing about, you know, not to do the walking to school uphill both ways bullshit, but like those days when there was a discernible sound of an area is based on that, you know, where you're not being informed by the internet and having access to every possible music imaginable. You're kind of informed by your best friend's band and sharing a rehearsal space with five bands, and everyone's kind of accidentally or intentionally ripping each other off, or, you know, nodding to each other musically.
Contaminating each other.
Yeah, you know, there's a sound from every, like, every...
Sure, it's the fucking Petri dish, right?
Exactly. And
but that's a good
thing. I kind of miss that shit.
Yeah,
I don't want to sound like a...
I understand. So what happened? When Sweet Cobra ain't the first time you run your own band, is it?
Kind of.
Oh, okay.
Where I'm like, right...
Still,
yeah,
I
definitely, with every band I was in, I always, like, did a lot of arranging, for sure. And I would like kind of drop in, help with like changes and, you know, there was, you know, I definitely was, contributing, melody wise, you know, whatever vocal pattern, you know, meter, all that stuff. But like Sweet Cobra was, you know, I basically wrote the.
Okay. Look, Timothy, we're going to get to that. Let me play Soft 11.
Sure. Awesome.
Yeah. down to the river, and the river was high. What's the point of even trying to throw in a line? The sun was going backwards, it was dinosaur time. A pterodactyl flew over me. Went down to the river, and the river was low. What's the point of putting in the boat and the oar? Nowhere to get to, nowhere to go. The sun dripped like a tangerine. I chucked in some stones, I was not alone. Everything was speaking to me. I thought of Aunt Shirley, who left way too early. And then the water started to sing. Then the water started to thin. Looked into the river and the river was wide. I could feel it pulling on the moon and the tide. All the little pebbles had been baptized. What a way to let it ride. The snakes along the bank told me to sing for you. Told me to sing for you. That's what I'm gonna do. I got some sugar vines.
Call me, baby, from the
has not been said, here just right. Too much destruction and horror in the way. This is my attempt to speak more eloquent. It's written between the lines. It's written between the lines. It's written between the lines of dead bodies.
for Pedro show. That chunky music started off with Sweet Cobra doing Soft 11. Dan Jones out of Kansas City, the demo of What a Way to Let It Ride. Psychic Hotline from their latest album, Call Me. D-U-M-E out of Providence, Rhode Island. There's a one-man band, Deep Fake, Brother Alec. He's also got a group, an ensemble, I guess, called Icewords. Sigati after that, Tollum and three guys from Florence Party. No, he's Tuscany, huh? That's, yeah, because it wasn't Florence, but it's that region. Liberty versus Freedom. And finally, Flight Risk from Sweet Cobra, which is a trip because the last D-U-M-E song I played was also called Flight Risk. And you know you can't copyright a song title.
Right.
Yeah.
I a lot of times I name songs, like if I come up with a band name that I know I'm not ready to use yet, and then I'll just name a song after that band name.
Let's talk about this proj named Sweet Cobra. Let's talk about the whole right. proj. But did it actually start with a name, or did it start with you grabbing the bass?
It started with me grabbing a Guild guitar, actually, and buying an Orange amp and doing like a Cro-Magnon tuning to make it easy on myself to like write songs and kind of like a drop D thing. And I think in my mind I did want to play guitar in that band, but then realized really quickly that I did not have the dexterity to play guitar well and sing. And luckily found really good guitar players that I could trick into being in my band with me, so that I could play bass badly in the band. I am the best bass player.
So you had that you had that epiphany.
Yeah, yeah.
Then does the name come?
The name came in a weird way. My daughter had a patch on her denim vest. She was one at the time, and it was a little cobra patch. It was like some racing shit, and someone had written with a magic marker "sweet" over the top of it. And that's how the name came.
Like, all right. And tell me about the first Sweet Cobra song you wrote.
The first one was called Torn Knees.
I got terrible knees. I can relate.
Torn. Yeah, yeah, right. I know about those knees, man. When we interviewed you at Electrical, you told us all about the knees.
Yep.
You told us about riding the bicycle to get your knees healthy again.
Oh, yeah. That helped me big time.
I also have.
Dink has it, too. Osgood Schlatter. When you're growing up, different parts grow at different speeds.
Yeah, yeah. It's more about, I guess that song was just a song about, revenge and just fucking, processing anger and wrong and whatever. But very, pretty simple.
And you wrote it on that detuned Guild guitar.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Just kind of, chugging away, single finger kind of stuff. And then putting it in the hands of better guitar players that make it sound less regressive,
I think it was the Dirty Harry movies where I think the big quote is a man's got to know his limitations.
Yeah, and then you got to get people, you just got to convince people to make you look better,
Look, and that also takes a man of humility because other people will want to look big by putting midgets in. Metaphorically, I'm not talking about
it. Yeah, 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 no.
What I mean? To look good.
Right.
I'll tell you the greatest, what you're talking about, Timothy, in my opinion, the greatest example is Miles Davis. He knew he wasn't going to play as good as Diz, so he was going to get the best guys in his band.
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So, John Coltrane. Paul Chambers on bass, oh my God. Okay, first Sweet Cobra gig.
Fireside Bowl. Shit, man. I think we played with this band called Meat Jack from Rhode Island, I want to say, or out that way.
Well, how'd it go? Is this your first time on bass in front of people?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. It went well. I mean, we had a friend that basically was like, I mean, it went the best it possibly could have. I mean, it really, because we had a close friend that was considering investing and starting a record label, and he whether he's blowing smoke or whatever, he decided to put our record out as his first thing. And, you know, there's not really a greater compliment than that when, you know, for me, it's like I start with the inside joke of like best friends and I sharing something together, and then kind of like leave it at that. If other people are interested or care about it, then I'm elated, excited. And then from there, it's all just bonus points.
Was it kind of a showcase for him?
No, not at all. Didn't know. I don't think we knew that he was.
Oh, okay.
I think there was a small buzz about us being this band that was like dudes from like the hardcore punk scene that were doing something slightly different. And the show went well. And then, you know, he kind of was like, yo, like, do you guys have enough material for a record? I want to do the record. And we're like, fuck yeah, dude, that's incredible. that's the way it should be, you know?
What's his name?
Scott.
Hey, Scott, thanks so much. Yes. We're at the end of the second hour, May 8, 2021, Dishwatch Pedro Show. Special guest, Timothy Remus. Hold tight for hour three. May 8, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watch for Pedro Show.
Oh,
Bach for Pedro show started the third hour off with Sweet Cobra doing Cave, then Pale Angels out of Wales with Railway, Tim Holhouse, Judy. I gotta find out what part of England he's from, because they fucked it up a couple shows ago. Sorry, Tim.
Yeah, and they take it pretty personal.
Yeah, and then finally, now people, this is the first time you heard this progeny or band name, Cloakroom, because it's all been Sweet Cobra regarding Timothy Remus and his, you know, jumping off the drum proj. And now, and this was called Lost Meaning. Well, now we're going to learn about this. Bring it, Timothy.
Yeah. I mean, this is a band I joined a couple years ago. I started off doing a lot of, like, live gigs with them as their kind of, like, live guy. Me and Jason from Sweet Cobra both kind of, like, tagged in and out of doing their touring. Their drummer was not set up to be on the road a lot. And then I eventually just kind of took over as the full-on drummer. We did that record that the songs you have are off of at Matt Talbot's studio down in Tolono, Illinois. And I guess that was around Christmas time of, I don't know, maybe, I guess, 19. It was right before COVID, I think. So whatever, that would be 19 into 20. They're two awesome dudes from Michigan City, Northwest Indiana, 10 years younger than me, really, like, just great dudes and great songwriters and, you know, just good Midwestern boys and great people to play music with and collaborate with.
I was just curious because you gave me a buttload of Sweet Cobra.
Yeah, so Cobra is like, you know.
Yeah, it's this, like, prod you got. I understand that.
Yeah, it's,
and then
a
you
20
gave me
year cloak thing, room, you know. And,
but you didn't give me any Office Boy, and you gave me no Baxter.
Yeah, I mean, both of those, so both Cloakroom and Sweet Cobra are dropping, you know, records, and it's just like what I'm excited about right now, you know.
Ah, okay, okay.
This stuff's fresh to me, and it's you know, I'm proud of it. I don't know. Yeah, I'm just moving forward. I'm like, that's what I want to, I guess. Yeah, it's what I'd want people to hear. I didn't know, like, how that would all work as far as the way you run your show, but I just assumed the best for me and for anyone else would be, like, this stuff that's the newest and the best versions of the things that I'm involved in, I guess.
On the Watch for Pedro show, the guest holds sway.
Yeah.
Okay, so you know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess both those songs.
The Watch for Pedro show.
Yeah.
There's no hard questions and there are no wrong answers.
That's good. It's too early. It's even too early here for a hard question.
Okay.
Even though it's like 3.
I want to play some more Cloakroom. A force
awesome.
And play.
Nice. Thank you.
And the match child painting this dream all cracks. Quiet dreams fire. War has never devolved. All cracks. Raising him the match child. Oil isn't him. Child. Painting the street. Oh, crap.
Well, for Pedro, show last music for this edition. Cloakroom with the Force of Play. Now, Cloakroom, like you told me, the bands where you were a drummer, man.
Yeah.
Now, they weren't your bands, but you weren't like your typical side mouse, right? You were involved with, like you said, even the way that the songs were saying.
Right. I think Doyle, the singer man, as you call it, in Cloakroom, respects my, you know, approach towards like, you know, placement of words and, you know, he definitely like, he definitely looks to me as a reference when he's like shaping even that part of the song. And you know, it was me stepping into some huge, huge shoes. Like the guy that started that band with those guys is a monster player, like just a killer drummer. You know, and I don't think in terms of like trying to put my stamp on it, but you have to know, like, I'm trying to like pay tribute and do that work justice as well as move forward with these guys in a collaborative way.
Well, can I ask you, Cloakroom with Timothy Remus,
mm-hmm.
songs begin with the Timothy Remus, or did you have to learn the other cats' tunes?
So, yeah, I started out as, like, the road guy.
Right.
And I was, like, it was a challenge. I mean, he's, like, at first listen, like, a lot of this stuff sounds kind of like it's this heavy, simple thing. And then you dig a little deeper, and, Brian, the drummer who wrote the first records with those guys, he's like, a jazz guy that like, just kind of picks and chooses those like things and kind of inserts them into the music, and you wouldn't notice it at first, but then listening to it as someone that's trying to learn it and do it right, and you're like, holy shit, this is like really masterfully crafted fucking drumming and like applied well, and you're like, the pressure to do it right.
Well, yeah,
you know, I don't want to fuck with
song. I can relate to that, Timothy. Like bass is like that. It's apparently simple, but it's nuanced like a motherfucker.
And
the reason it is because it's making the shit fit together.
Right.
It's bringing a grooving drummer. There's no better fucking ingredient you can put in the fucking tune stew.
Yeah. Tune stew, holy shit. I mean, like, when I met you the first time, you were telling me that you Iggy was making you play with a pick.
Yeah,
you know, it's kind of like that. It's like, well, yeah. Mike Watt is Mike Watt. In the Stooges, Mike Watt plays a pick because Mike Watt accepts that the Stooges needs a bass player to play with a pick. You know what I mean? It's like,
but when it came time to do the gigs, he says, Mike, you can play these songs with your fingers.
So he's just fucking with you.
Well, maybe a recording is like a moment in time where gigs.
Yeah, totally.
You know what I mean? And yeah.
But you told me something actually, that day that stuck with me, and he wanted you to like even stand up straighter when you played.
Yeah.
And like the idea of the physicality of like playing.
Well,
how
he really
that can
liked
change.
Them outfits too. I mean, there was some other, you know, because he thought it meant focus.
Right. Exactly.
And that's the way Ig is, man. When he runs a music thing, he wants focus, and I'm into that.
Yeah, man. I mean, I'm into like, you know. Like all that, I think it all, you know, we had a thing for a while where we were trying to really make sure we were in the same room together for like a little while before the gig. You know, you might be off talking to someone, doing a shot or whatever, but I was like, let's all be around each other for, you know, 10, 15 minutes before we get on stage.
Me and the Ashton Brothers.
You know what I mean? And
get this, me and the Ashton Brothers, 2 hours before every gig. 2 hours.
Yeah, I mean,
with James Williamson, me and Scotty would go in there, and later Larry, and do the entire set in his tail room, just beating on the little pig nose. And
right.
Look, tell me, is there another Sweet Cobra record coming?
So the stuff that we sent you is going to be on the next record.
Okay.
That's coming up. That stuff coming up.
So was this the first time?
Most of it, except for Future Ghosts. That's from a previous record called The Earth.
So was this the first time people got to hear?
Yeah.
Whoa, thank you. I got the Sweet Cobra debut.
Right.
Wow. Okay, so of course it's too early. I don't know. Once you get done, do you start thinking of making the next one?
Oh, for sure. I think as much as thinking about making the next one, thinking about, like, the approach, like, we kind of been kicking around this idea to do, like, a really quick, like, sealed the fork kind of thing where it's a little less involved. Not quite like a live record.
Yeah, live to, like, two-track. That's the B-side of Minutemen did that for B-side of Buzzer Howl Under the Influence of Heat. And the record ended up costing only $50.
Right, yeah. So we have like a little, we have a little warehouse space, and we're kind of trying to build out like a studio in it, and, you know, we're going to set some guidelines.
Yeah, get another Petri dish going to it.
Yeah.
Look, it's been a bit, you do get the next thing done, let's come back on the show, play it, and talk about it, okay?
For sure, yeah, absolutely.
Thanks for being on, truly. People, it's been May 8th, 2021 edition of Watt for Peebler, so keep your powder dry.